we've been kind of going through some challenging questions that as members of the church we face from time to time. And last week we began looking at the question, do members of the Church of Christ believe in the authority of the Old Testament? How do we view it? What purpose does it serve as far as for us Christians living in the New Testament during the time of Christ? And so we're going to continue to look at that. We're also within that framework, we're considering what law of God governs us today, and not just us, but all mankind. And we're going to get to that question as we move forward. So in our last study, we looked at the three periods or three laws that have governed man. First was the patriarchal law, the Mosaic law, and the law of Christ. If you have questions about those, I invite you to go back and look at our previous study on those. So, what law governs mankind today? So I want to go, I mentioned this one last week, but I want to go and start at 1 Corinthians chapter 9. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, and we're going to begin our study here. I want you to notice what Paul says and then what's implied by what he's bringing up for us. Verse 19, this is out of the ESV. The text says, "For though I am free from all," this is Paul speaking, or writing, "I have made myself a servant to all that I might win more of them." So what was Paul talking about? He's talking about his evangelistic efforts. Paul is saying, I'm trying to win souls, and I'm going to do what I can to do that within the framework of God's commands. Verse 20, "To the Jews, I became as a Jew in order to win more Jews. To those under the law, I became as one under the law, though not being myself under the law, that I might win those under the law." So Paul uses kind of a parallel dialogue, where he brings up something, then he repeats it, but he says it in a different way. So when he says to the Jews, "I became as a Jew," what does he mean by that? And so,
well, I don't think he means it literally. He didn't go back to the Jewish faith. What he did was he could tell them about his life when he was a Jew, that he knows how they think and how they look at, you know, God's will and things like that, and he can bring them forward into the law of Christ.
Okay.
Using that. I once was just like you, you know, like I forget the verses where he talks about his history as a Jew. You know, he wasn't just a Jew, he was, you know, the top of his class and all that stuff.
Okay.
So he knows about Judaism, but using that, he can bring them forward into the law of Christ.
And Paul was a very zealous Jew prior to becoming a Christian, right? And he knows the law really well. So let's give an example of what he's trying to say here in verse 20. Circumcision, key point of Judaism, right? Of the Mosaic law, right? Is that correct?
Yes.
Y'all, can we accept that first premise? We can't accept that, and we need a deeper discussion, right? But within the law of Moses, circumcision was very important. However, in Christianity, is the practice of circumcision important to being a Christian?
No,
it's not, right? Does God command Christian men to be circumcised? No. Would it be wrong for a Christian man to be circumcised?
No.
It's a personal choice, right? God, you can choose to do that or not do it. It's the same thing with meats, right? Under Judaism, there were restrictions on certain types of meat. If the hoof is what?
Close.
Split, right? Don't eat it. If it's whole, you can eat it. So pork, for a Jewish person, not only may have been unhealthy for you, but that wasn't even really the point, right? In Judaism, it was sinful because God said, don't do that. However, within the Christian law, is eating pork any different than eating any other kind of meat?
No.
Is there any kind of element of faith to it? There's not, right? So as a Christian, I can choose to eat pork or not, right? Some people like it, some don't. So, but can you imagine what it would have been like for most Jewish people who had lived their whole lives believing that was wrong? Do you think they were going to eat pork? No. Do you think they were still probably going to circumcise their children, their young men? Yes. And there's nothing wrong with that as long as you then, as a Jewish Christian, try to bind that on Gentile Christians. That's the whole, go read Galatians chapter 2, 3, right? He hammers that. But there's nothing wrong for a Jewish person to circumcise themselves or their family. There's nothing wrong for them to abstain from eating pork. So what's Paul saying here? I'm trying to use that as an illustration. So when you go to the book of Acts, after Timothy comes into the ministry of Paul, do you remember what was one of the very first things Paul did with Timothy? Number one, Timothy, who can tell me his background? Where does he? What's his heritage?
Jewish mother and Greek father.
Exactly. So he's from a mixed background. His father was Greek, so he was a Gentile. His mother was Jewish. When Paul converts Timothy, has he been circumcised? I'll give you the cliff notes. No, he wasn't. Right? He wasn't. But what was one of the very first things Paul did with Timothy? He had him circumcised. Yes. Let's go to, just so I can show you this. And where I'm looking for. Okay, so let's go to chapter 16, Acts chapter 16. All right, let's read the first few verses. Paul also came to Derbe and to Lystra. A disciple was there named Timothy. So we know at this point, what is he? What is Timothy? Which means he's a what? He's a Christian, right? He's a Christian at this point. He's been converted. It says that he's the son of a Jewish woman who was a believer. So his mom was a Christian. And when you read the letter to Timothy, it's implied that even his grandmother. So his whole family seems to have been converted. Verse 2, he's well spoken of by the brothers at Lystra and Iconium. Paul wanted Timothy to accompany him, and he took him and circumcised him because the Jews who were in those places, for they all knew that his father was a Greek. And he gets into some other stuff. But I just want to note that one thing there. Now, I thought Paul argued that as a Christian, circumcision doesn't mean anything. He did, right? Go read Galatians. Go read Galatians. He really hits this hard. Colossians as well. So then why does he do it? Is Paul being a hypocrite?
So that people can call it in contention. Like, people would be willing to listen to him or accept him.
Do you know one of the number one places where we're giving him more access? Where's the first place Paul goes to whenever he goes to a new city?
Synagogue.
The synagogue. Or if he's in Jerusalem, he'll go to the temple. If Timothy is uncircumcised, Was it against the law, the Jewish law, for him to go into the temple or into a synagogue? Yes. And so Paul is being very practical here. Circumcision doesn't change Timothy's relationship with God. He was a Christian. But what Paul is saying, I'm trying to do something to make you, so that the Jewish people who were trying to convert, this won't be a hindrance to them. Because it's not going to hurt you to be circumcised. Well, figuratively, maybe literally. But you see what Paul is doing here. Paul is saying, to the Jews, I became as one who lived as a Jew. There were many Jewish customs that even though they become Christians, they can still do those customs. They just can't make them binding on other people to follow. Go ahead, Doug.
Maybe a modern day example somewhere. When I first went to New England while I was in service, started working up there, the people up there were very bold about letting you know, if you don't know anything about our history, our culture, don't come talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
So the people of New England were very cold unless you could show that you were aware of what made New Englanders and stuff like that. So you had to show that you're aware of their condition, their culture, or they wouldn't listen to you.
And it has nothing to do with your relationship with God to learn about their culture, but what it does do is it helps you to get into their culture. Here's a great example. Jody, he's going into a new area in Belize. They have their own customs. So what has he decided to do? He said, I'm going to go spend longer periods of time so I can gain acceptance there. And so if we go back to 1 Corinthians 9, what's Paul talking about? To the Jews, I became as a Jew. Right? When I'm hanging out with Jews, I'm trying to make it easier for them to hear what I'm saying to them. I don't want circumcision to be a hindrance toward them. I don't want. He's not going to go in there with bacon hanging out his mouth, right? Trying to talk to him. Well, bacon's great, right? You fry it up real crispy. That's delicious stuff. But if I'm going, even today, if I'm going to go into the home of somebody who doesn't believe in eating pork, I'm not going to go in there and do something like, I know it's a silly example, but it's real, right? There are things that offend people. So as long as it doesn't offend God, what we're doing, we should try to meet people where they are as far as those types of things. I'm not trying to say change the doctrine. We keep the doctrine solid. But in those kind of things, Paul's saying, I did what I could to win the Jews. Go back to 1 Corinthians 9. All right, keep reading. Go down to verse 21. So he said, and notice that little parenthetical thought he put in verse 20. Though not being myself under the law, what's he saying? I'm not a Jew any longer. I'm not one under the Mosaic law. Heritage, yes, I'm Jewish, but I'm a Christian now. I don't live under the law of Moses. Go to verse 21. To those outside the law, who are they?
Gentiles,
right? Anybody that's not Jewish or an adherent of the Mosaic law. I became as one outside the law, not being outside the law, but the law of God, but under the law of Christ, that I might win those outside the law. So what does he mean by that? He's going into a Gentile home. He's not going to talk to them about being circumcised. Because they don't need to do that anyway. He's not going to talk to them about, why are you eating that pork? Right? Or any other example we could give. Because those aren't matters of faith. So you get this dichotomy. Paul is saying what? I am under which law? He does point this out. Not being outside the law of God, but under, I put myself under what? Or in subjection to the law of Christ. So Paul says, I am under the law of Christ. Let's go to Romans 4:15. We're going to hit some verses here kind of quick in succession. So Romans 4:15, what does Paul write there? He says, for the law, real important in the book of Romans. Let me just say this so you know this. Whenever you study the book of Romans, understand Paul is not using the law, that phrase, generically. He has a specific law in mind. So when you read the book of Romans, when it says the law, what law is he always talking about? The law of Moses. So when he says, for the law brings, he has a specific law in mind. He says, the law of Moses brings what? Wrath. But where there is no law, there is no transgression. Now that is an interesting phrase. Where there is no law, there is no transgression. So keep that in mind. What does he mean by that, by the way?
If there's no law, you can't sin. Because the law makes sin exist.
Yes, for sin to exist, there must have been something to break to begin with. So we're going to come back to that thought later on. But that's an important thought. So sin implies what? Some kind of law to break. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
This is really important when you get into the dichotomy of Jew and Gentile. How can you call a Gentile a sinner if they're not under the law of Moses? We're going to come back to that way to answer it. But just think about that. Law. Okay, where there is no law, there's no transgression. So if there were no law, there'd be no sin. All right, let's go to Hebrews chapter 1. We looked at this one before. I just want to note it real quick. Hebrews chapter 1. Notice how the writer here begins his letter to the, again, Jewish Christians. How does he start his letter? What's the book of Hebrews? Anybody want to take a stab at what is the purpose of the book of Hebrews? Anybody know the cliff notes on this book? What is it about?
Help Jews understand that there is someone better than the anointed one, that he is the anointed one is here, and he's better than all these laws and the temple and all the sacrifices and all that's been going on. He's fulfilled that. He's the improvement. You need to look at the Christ, the Messiah, that has come instead of being something else.
Yeah, because the theme of the book of Hebrews is,
hope.
Go ahead.
Hope.
Somewhat, yes. Our better hope is Christ, right? And why does he need to give them hope? Because these are Jewish Christians who are in danger of falling back into Judaism, into the Mosaic law. So the theme of the letter is don't fall from Christ, right? Don't go backwards to the law of Moses. That's really the driving force of this letter. So notice how he begins the letter. Verse 1. Long ago, at many times and in many ways, God spoke to our fathers. Whose fathers? You need to know this. Whose fathers? Anybody's fathers? Everybody's fathers?
Jewish fathers.
That's what's in mind here. He spoke by the prophets. But in these last days, he has spoken to us by his Son, whom he appointed heir of all things, through whom he also created the world. So Jesus is whom God speaks to during the writing of the book of Hebrews. He is whom he's speaking through today. All right. Let's go to John 4. Sorry, we're bouncing around, but we need to kind of, we're trying to collect a mosaic picture, if you will. Putting together a puzzle. All right, John 4, Jesus is meeting with who? 19 through 24. Who is Jesus talking to? Just whoever wants to go first. Who's he talking to?
Where are we?
John 4. John 4, come on, y'all know this.
Samaritan woman.
There you go. Thank you. He's talking to the Samaritan woman. That's important. Why? Who are the Samaritans?
Mixed breed.
Mixed breeds. Did they live under the Mosaic Law? They were mixed, right? They weren't really living under it. They had come up with their own kind of eclectic ideas. That's why she brings up the question about where you worship. Notice his response to her in verse 21. Woman, believe me, the hour's coming when neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem will one worship. And notice verse 22. You, Samaritans, that's the plural form of you, by the way. So he's not directing this at her necessarily, but at the Samaritan people. He says, you Samaritans worship what you do not know. For what? We worship what we know, for salvation is from the Jews. Now it's interesting, he says that because he is that very salvation that will come from the Jews. Notice as he goes on, but the hour is coming, and now is here, when the true worshiper will worship the Father in spirit and truth. For the Father is seeking such people to worship him. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and in truth. So Jesus says, a time is coming, and now is beginning already, where we're going to transition from what used to be to what is. Make sense? So Jesus says there's a change coming. You need to be a pagan. Now what's interesting is he does not tell her what it is, does he? And there's deep reasons for that when you study the Gospels. What does Paul say, Romans chapter 1, verse 16? I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Jesus Christ, for the power of God unto salvation to everyone who believes, for the Jew first, and then also for the Greek. The Jews had to receive the message first, but that's a whole different study. I just want to note what he's saying here is things are about to change in a massive way. In a massive way. So, prior to John 4 and in John 4, what laws ruled mankind? We went over this last week. What two laws ruled mankind? You're either one thing or you're the other. Patriarchal law. You were either under the Mosaic law, which meant you were a Jew, or you were under the patriarchal law, which was meant you were a Gentile. You were under one of those two rules. Remember what he said in Romans 4? For where there is no law, there is no transgression. Remember that? Everybody's under some kind of law. Everybody's under some kind of law. And at this time, you were either a Jew or you were a Gentile. You were under one of those two systems. Now, let's progress forward. Let's go to Hebrews chapter 9. Hebrews chapter 9. Let's go back to the Hebrews writer. He has a lot more to say to us, but we're going to catch one little bit here. Hebrews 9. Now Jesus said that there's a time coming and now is when the true worshiper worship God in spirit and in truth. So he says a change is coming. And notice what the Hebrews writer says, Hebrews 9:15. Therefore he, Jesus, is the mediator of a new covenant. So that those who are called may receive the promised eternal inheritance. Since a debt has occurred that redeems them from the transgressions, where there is no law, there is no transgression. Jesus says he's saving them from their transgressions committed under the first covenant. For where a will is involved, the death of the one who made it must be established. Did you catch that? Let's read that one more time. For where a will is involved, whose will are we talking about? The will of Jesus Christ, the new covenant. The death of the one who made it must be established. For a will takes place only at when? Death, since it is not in force as long as the one who made it is alive. Therefore, not even the first covenant was inaugurated without blood. Blood reference back to death, right? What does this mean for us in our study? When did the law of Christ, the law Paul talked about, when did it become effective? When did it become binding on mankind? When? When Jesus died. I mean, the Hebrews writer can't be clear, can he? So, I've heard this question a lot over the years. When did the law of Christ begin? It began at the death of Jesus. Over that 3-day weekend, when he died on the cross, when he was buried, when he resurrected, he enacted in that movement his covenant. Anything that happened prior to that, anybody that lived prior to that and died, lived under what? One of those two systems, the Mosaic or the patriarchal. But if you live beyond the death of Christ, Jesus says you're under my covenant. So, the enactment of a will begins when? At the death of the testator, or the one who wrote the will. Alright? Let's go to Galatians chapter 3. Galatians chapter 3, and let's begin at verse 23. I'll give everybody a chance to slide over there. Galatians 3, and verse 23, Paul again writing here. Now, before faith came, when he says before faith came, is he talking about somebody's individual personal faith? No, that's not the way faith is being used in this context. It is used like that sometimes, but not here. When he says before faith came, what is he talking about? The law of Christ, the Christian faith. We're talking about it at the... We're talking about the whole thing, right? The Christian faith. All right. Now, before faith came, we, who's the we there? This is really important. We, is he talking to everybody?
Jews.
Real important. We know that. When he says we here, he's talking about those of Judaism. I'll come back to that later. We were held captive under the law of Moses, imprisoned until the coming faith, the faith of Christ, the law of Christ, would be revealed. So then the law was our guardian until Christ came, in order that we might be justified by faith, not personal faith, but the law of Christ. He's using this in that sense in this context. It's not your personal faith that justifies you. It is the faith of Christ, or the faith of the Christian law, is in that sense. For in Christ you are all sons of God through faith, the faith. Right? How are we made sons of God? Through faith, through Jesus. And that's what he'll later on in this same chapter, verse 27, for as many of you are baptized into Christ, have what? Clothe yourselves with Christ. All right, let's go to Romans chapter 3. Everybody with me up to this point? You got a question? We're moving kind of fast. Romans chapter 3. And I bet a lot of us can quote verse 23, right? We've heard this one a lot, but I think sometimes we fail to really dig into the deeper context of chapter 3, and I'm as guilty as anybody, of what Paul is actually talking about here. But notice verse 23. For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. Notice again, chapter Romans 4, what did he say? For where there is no law, there is no transgression. Yet in chapter 3, 23, what does he say? For all have sinned, what does that mean? All are under law, right? There is a law governing everybody. But before Christ came, there were two laws, and you were judged two different ways. All right, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God, and are what? However, Paul says now what? And are justified by his grace as a gift through the redemption that is in Christ Jesus, whom God put forth as a propitiation by his blood to be received by faith. This is the personal faith. This is it being used as the personal faith. Received by faith, this was shown, this was to show God's righteousness because in his divine forbearance he had passed over former sins. It was to show his righteousness at the present time so that he might be just and the justifier of the one who has faith in Jesus. John 3:16-17, right? That famous verse. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son that whoever believes in him should what? Should not perish but have everlasting life. That's what he's talking about. So, all have sinned, all were under some law. All right. I want to get somewhere tonight. I'm trying to get there quick. All right, Colossians chapter 2. He's going through this. He's kind of repeating some of the same things. Well, let's read this. I think this is important. Let's go to Colossians chapter 2, verse 11. Colossians 2, verse 11. Paul again writing. He says, In him also you were circumcised with a circumcision made without hands, by putting off the body of the flesh by the circumcision of Christ, having been buried with him in baptism, in which you were also raised with him through faith in the powerful working of God, who raised him from the dead. This is why being obedient in baptism is so important. Until you go through that process, you've not been circumcised with the circumcision made without hands. Do you get that? Yeah. That's why that's so important. It's in baptism, Galatians 3:27, if I can get that out, is where we're clothed with Christ. Until you have went through that, you're not clothed with Christ. That's where we meet him, is in obedience to the gospel. Paul says that's super important. It's there where we are, where if you were a Jew, you were taken out from underneath the law of Moses, and you have subjected yourself, you've put yourself under the law of Christ. That's where that transition occurs. For the Gentile, this is the point where they were removed from the patriarchal law and its judgments, and they were voluntarily placing themselves under the law of Christ. He goes on later to say that it was in Christ's death that he nailed, verse 14, well, let's read 13. And you who were dead in your trespasses, in your sin, in the uncircumcision of your flesh, God made alive together with him, having forgiven us all our trespasses, by canceling the record of debt that stood against us with its legal demands. This he set aside, nailing it to the cross. What was nailed to the cross? The former laws of God. They were nailed to the cross, and this is where we were put in subjection to the law of Christ. I want to come back to these in just a minute, but I want to note something here. I think this is real important. When we get into a study of the law of Moses and are Christians to follow it, and you always get the question of, are we under the Ten Commandments? You've heard that, right? And people get all up in arms about the law or the Ten Commandments, right? Number one, we've already noted, in the Mosaic Law, were there Ten Commandments? How many were there? 630 some odd laws, right? They're not 10, but people get fixated on those 10 because they remember the movie with Charlton Heston when he came down off the mountain, you know, and he's leaning there against the rock and everything, right? We all remember to see that dramatic picture. I think I had it up there, didn't I? Well, maybe earlier. But when we talk about the law of Moses, sometimes I don't know why Christians don't get this. If you are not Jewish, you are never under the law of Moses. The law of Moses was never binding on you. You are never to follow the law of Moses. You are under the patriarchal system. Why do we want to go back to the law of Moses when we were never there? If you're not, unless you're a Jew or used to be a Jewish adherent, the laws of the law of Moses, the Levitical laws, the laws written in Numbers and Deuteronomy, Exodus, all those, they're not binding on you anyway. They never were binding on you because you were never a Jew. So I scratch my head when Christians try to go back to the law of Moses as a proof text for what we should be doing. Those were never proof texts for you, even before Christ came, which you weren't even alive 2,000 years ago. But you couldn't even have gone there to defend what you believe anyway. Unless you wanted to become a proselyte, and that's a whole big process. So I think that that's something we got to get. We need to understand that. You never were under that. Gentiles have never been under the law of Moses. They were under the patriarchal system, and then after the coming of Christ, we were all bound under the law of Christ. I'm actually going to go backwards on this. Well, we're out of time. Next week, we're going to go backwards sort of on this. I'm going to go to Acts 17 and go backwards up the trail here on some of these other texts. But actually, not next week. I won't be here next week. Doug will be here. And he'll have a really good study for us, for you guys, and I'll watch when I can online. But I do appreciate your attendance tonight. We're going to dismiss now, and then in a few minutes we'll assemble again for our devotional period in just a moment.